You're with Clement Magnatella on 702.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
DStv Channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
Six minutes after 9 o'clock. Dumelang. Welcome to the Clement Magnatella Show on this Monday, the 25th of March. I hope you're well this morning. I hope you're ready for the week. We're live from the Sandton Convention Center this morning, where the 12th annual Bi-Local Summit and Expo is taking place. Brought to you by Proudly South African. Bi-Local to create jobs. Now, this summit shines the spotlight on sectors that carry an impact on the economy and job creation. I have been walking around here at the Sandton Convention Center and I've seen there are over 200 homegrown brands here showcasing their craft throughout today and tomorrow. There are manufacturers here. You've got producers, buyers, enterprise development agencies. You have government representatives. I saw the Trade and Industry Minister, Ibrahim Patel, passing here a few minutes ago. I'll try grab him for a few minutes before he leaves the venue. You've got policymakers, you've got consumers here as well. They're all gathered in one place. How intentional are you, in fact, about buying local? Because localization plays a significant role as a driver of economic reconstruction and recovery, especially after the disruption we saw to the world's supply chain because of the war in Ukraine, right? It's probably important now more than ever for businesses and consumers in South Africa to support local businesses and buy local. So how deliberate are you about buying local? I think over the years I've become more and more aware of where I spend my money. I'm more conscious about it. I'm very deliberate. How deliberate are you? 011-883-0702. That's the number to dial. The WhatsApp line is 072-702-1702. Did you watch the Australian Grand Prix this past weekend? What a dramatic race. Max Verstappen retired from the race. His car was on fire. When last did you see that? Red Bull is always somehow prepared with their vehicles. It's seldom that you're going to have Max Verstappen's tires burning. Lewis Hamilton was also out of the race. He was the second retirement of the day. He had engine failures. George Russell crashed at the end of the Grand Prix. It was so dramatic. But what a brilliant comeback for Ferrari. Carlos Sainz finished first. Carlos Sainz finished first. Charles Leclerc finished second. And Sainz was just incredible, winning that Australian Grand Prix after coming out of hospital. He was so dominant. And this is someone who just came out of hospital following that surgery he had. He wasn't 100% fit. But my goodness, he did perform. He killed it. So let me know if you've got some reflections on the Australian Grand Prix. Give me a call or send me a WhatsApp. At 10 o'clock, we are going to be live in Russia following that terror attack on Friday evening at a music concert, which has left more than 133 people dead and more than 100 hospitalized. It was so scary reading about it. We're told that camouflaged gunmen opened fire and threw explosive devices inside a packed Crocus City Hall in Moscow. And these were people who were waiting for a performance by a Soviet-era rock band. The Islamic State has since claimed responsibility. This is actually the deadliest attack in Russia for at least a decade. President Vladimir Putin has described it as a barbaric terrorist attack. There are links that are being made between this attack and Ukraine. I don't know how legitimate that is. I'll ask my guest about how they draw this link. The US issued a warning of a terror attack a few days before it actually happened, but Putin dismissed it as propaganda designed to scare Russian citizens. And look at where things are now. We'll talk about that at 10 o'clock. 10:30. We are going to bring in the local businesses that are showcasing their products here at the Buy Local Summit and Expo. And then at 11 o'clock on our Family Matters feature, I want us to have a conversation about dealing with grief. But look at how children deal with grief. So what's the best way to support children who are dealing with grief, right? Just as grief affects different people in different ways. Grief also affects children very differently than adults. And it's tricky with children because younger ones may not understand the concept of death and its permanence. So a child might believe that death is temporary, particularly because so many cartoons show a character being mortally wounded and then coming back to life. So when a child loses a grandparent or a parent or a classmate or even a beloved family pet, the grieving process can be difficult. So as a guardian, as a parent, you need to be aware when they are grieving and support them, especially because you might not even realize that they are grieving sometimes. So that's going to be our conversation on our Family Matters feature at 11 o'clock this morning. That's the show coming up over the next 3 hours.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
But we start with your calls on the 702 open line, 011-883-0702. Your WhatsApps as well are coming through on 072-702-1702. How deliberate are you about buying local? Are you a kind of a person that is more conscious, that you are more deliberate, that you care about where you spend your dollar, where you spend your rand? Or are you a type that goes, I don't really care, I can't even make up and tell you how many of the products I have in my wardrobe, in my kitchen, how many of those are actually by local manufacturers? So how deliberate are you? All right, we're going to try those WhatsApps again.
Is you really see a politician or a famous celebrity wearing local brands and, you know, just like intentionally supporting local brands, like you see in America. Americans, you'd see them wearing Nike, Gucci. Okay, Gucci is not American, but you see them wearing these American brands, like, proudly. But in SA, it's a different matter. You'll never see a Casper, you'll rarely see a Casper Nieuwes bragging about a dripped sneaker or whatever, eh? Yeah, it's a sad reality we live in South Africa. Quotes from Devland.
Happy Monday, Clement, Mr. C. Yeah, I think I'm intentional a lot about buying local because I'm proudly South African to start with. And also, you know, at least when one knows, you know, how far it goes when you support local. And also, you know, yes, we know that sometimes quality can be an issue, but I'm forever local. And I will stay that way. I am aware.
Yeah, we've got to be quite deliberate about buying local. You really don't understand the kind of difference you make, right? When you're supporting local manufacturers. And yes, I know about the complaints sometimes that we have around the kind of quality of the local products, but it's not all bad. I mean, even some of our international products, right? International clothing, some of what they manufacture, who says it's always top quality? It's not. So equally so, some of our local products are not going to be best. And nobody is suggesting that you must support local for the sake of supporting local, even when you're not happy with like the quality of the products. No. You must still actually be given what your money is worth. But we have to be deliberate about buying local. Kabu says, Clement, please tell me the difference between proudly SA products and put SA Africans first. These things are the same, but they are often described differently. But they are the same. I'm not sure I understand what you're trying to say there. It's buy local, it's support local, whether it's through localization, the policies government has, or through you spending your money on the locally manufactured products. That's you supporting the local economy, helping with the creation of jobs as well. Let's go to some more WhatsApp voice notes on 072-702-1702.
Hi, morning, Mr. Maniatella. Welcome back. Man, what a race yesterday for Verstappen. I'm not sure whether he would have won, but a great 1 and 2 for Ferrari. Carlos Sainz shined yesterday. He's going to become hot property if he continues in this vein. But I think he's showing his employers, and I think he's determined to show them, well, you want to get rid of me, so yeah, I will show you one of my fingers. And then you go. Stormers, you lekker ding. Stormers have to wear the news. Bye-bye.
Morning, Clement. How are you? When it comes to buying local, we want to support these local brands and whatever from the spaza shops and everything. But the problem is that they overprice things, man. They just make things expensive. I don't know why they're doing that. You can go to to a shop, a local shop, and they're selling a sweater for 200 rand. And you go to a Chinese shop, they sell the same sweater for 70 rand. So these people here in South Africa, I guys know, we overprice things. That's why now we don't even buy local.
Okay, but who says the one at the Chinese shop is of good quality? What if that's a fake product? And I'm not suggesting here that Chinese shops only have fake products. There are many shops locally there as well that have got fake products. I'm just saying, if you sew a sweater, right, at a local shop that costs 200 rand and you go at a Chinese shop and it costs about 60 rand, like, have you checked the quality of the two? And also, why is it a problem to spend 1,000 rand or 3,000 rand on a top that is designed by Maxhosa, a local designer, but you are comfortable to go spend 20,000 rand on a top by Gucci or Versace? I think sometimes we just have to be honest. We have this perception about locally produced products, and we think they're not necessarily of good quality, and we've got to deal with that perception. I don't think it's always accurate. And I'm not suggesting here that all of our locally produced products are on par and excellent in quality. I'm not suggesting that. But I'm saying we need to deal with the perception that, oh, the products are overpriced or they're not of good quality. Let me know how deliberate you are about buying local. It's 18 minutes now after 9 o'clock.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyatela
on 702.
Okay, so we are going to be hearing this morning from the speaker, well, from court, about that urgent interdict against the arrest of the Speaker of Parliament, Nosiviwe Mapisa Nqakula. I was looking at the court papers that have been filed by the NPA. And I just want us to have a conversation here about what happened on Friday, because I think things were happening so fast that we didn't get a chance to properly deliberate, properly assess how things happened, right? I'm a little concerned about how things were conducted on the part of the Speaker, but on the part of the NPA as well. The NPA was meant to arrest the Speaker of Parliament. In fact, what they were trying to do in the beginning was to arrange for her to hand herself over to the authorities, go to your police station so that she can appear in court, because you're trying to avoid a lot of drama. First of all, can we just talk about that? Why is it that when there are high-profile cases or high-profile individuals that are facing charges and the NPA is about to charge them, there's somehow an arrangement that is going to be made? So they're going to talk to their legal teams to get them to arrange them to go to your police station so that they can subsequently go and appear in court. It happened with Vincent Smith. It's happened with other politicians. Does it happen with ordinary South Africans? And maybe the argument you could use is some of the ordinary South Africans don't necessarily have legal teams that are prepared to immediately deal with a case where the NPA is about, or the law enforcement agencies are about to effect an arrest, because the NPA is quite ready to prosecute that particular individual. But we've also seen cases where the NPA is going to pounce on people. The Hawks, they pounce on particular people because the case is ready for prosecution. So is it always the case that arrangements are made for people to hand themselves over to your police station, or sometimes actually the NPA or some of our law enforcement agencies, they pounce on people and get them to the police station. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, do we actually understand how unprecedented the events of Friday were? It was so unprecedented, and I tried to figure out, and I was talking to like lawyers who've been in the business for years to try and understand, because they know this better than we do. Have they seen anything like that, where when you are making arrangements as the NPA for someone to hand themselves over and you are telling them, we are preparing to charge you, and the person launches an urgent interdict? That's unprecedented. And I'm worried about the precedent that that sets. Because I bet you, going forward, we're going to get a number of people that are going to be resisting arrests by law enforcement agencies and use that Stalingrad approach of launching urgent interdicts because you want to buy themselves time. I mean, imagine I launch an urgent interdict. I say, oh, it's my birthday today, therefore you are not allowed to arrest me. Or I'm challenging this arrest. It's my birthday today. And then I must respect the fact that, oh, you've got every right to go to court and exhaust all the legal revenues. I mean, the legal avenues. So there's nothing I can do about it. So I'll wait for us to appear in court 3 days later. So how do we balance the two? One, you want to ensure that people are not abusing court processes, which I honestly think in this case, the speaker is doing that. The speaker knows it. The NPA knows very well that the speaker doesn't have a case. Where have you ever heard someone being arrested wanting to look at the full docket? I want to see how strong your case is before you even arrest me. Now we're dealing with the merits of the case before you've even appeared in court? And I wonder if we understand the consequences of what has unfolded on Friday. And the question I'm broadly asking, and maybe you're a lawyer, maybe you're not a lawyer. How do we balance the two? One, you want to afford the speaker the right that she has to go to court when she feels that her rights are being violated. Like Zuma has been going to court to avoid facing corruption charges. How many years has it been now? Is it not over 10 years? And he's got every right to approach the court, even when it's pretty clear that he's employing a Stalingrad approach. But you respect that, right? But how do we balance between respecting someone's right to exhaust all the legal avenues? We balance that with the need for us to prevent someone from abusing court processes. Is it even possible for us to do that? 011-883-0702. Let's chat on the WhatsApp line on 072-702-1702.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyatela
on 702.
It's 25 minutes after 9 o'clock. We're going to your calls on 011-883-0702. Your WhatsApp's on 072-702-1702. My colleague Mandy Wiener sent me a message saying, in 2008, Jackie Selebi actually did it. The NPA was getting ready to prosecute him, and he brought an urgent interdict against that. I've just asked Mandy to give me some more details on that. On what happened to that? Did they execute that arrest warrant, or did they wait for the court to rule on it? And what do you think should be the approach here? Because you also don't want the NPA to do things illegally, so to speak, in that if someone launches an urgent interdict, you expect a law enforcement agency to respect that court process, right? They must wait until the matter goes to court, and then they can defend why they're not prepared to give that full docket until someone appears in court, and they can deal with it from there. Or some people have suggested, why? Because they have a right to go and execute that arrest warrant. They can see that the basis with which the speaker is relying on are not strong enough. So why not go ahead and execute that warrant of arrest and go defend yourself in court? But then when you do that as the NPA, then you're not respecting the rule of law, you're not respecting someone's right to also challenge your own processes if they feel that their rights are being violated. It's so tricky. But I think we've got to find some kind of a balance, because people are always going to find a way to abuse court processes. We've seen it with a certain public protector who's no longer a public protector. We've seen it with a certain former president in the corruption case. And I don't know if this means we've got to think about how we change some of our rules, but I just think this is going to cause some problems in the future. I see that Karen Moon has actually been reporting on the court documents, the NPA's response to this urgent interdict by Mapisa Ngakula. And they've indicated in their court papers, that's the NPA, that the application to block her arrest was actually a surprise to the NPA, because it was instituted and served at the time that the NPA was still engaging with the Speaker of Parliament through her legal representatives to hand herself over at a police station for processing in preparation for the enrollment of the matter. So they view this as an abuse of court processes. In fact, according to the NPA, after Mapisa Ngakula was told that a decision has now been made to charge her with corruption, she stated that she was aware of the investigation and that she would answer for herself in court. But she delayed in providing investigators with her lawyer's contact details, according to the court papers by the NPA. So even the NPA itself in their court papers are saying this delay that we saw on Friday is not good, because it sets a bad precedent. I mean, when you think about equality in the rule of law, no one gets special treatment. And in this case, it really appears that that has really been the case in the case of the Speaker of Parliament. Let's go to your WhatsApps now on 0727021702.
Good morning, Clement. On the buy local topic, I'm one person who also likes buying local. But I think there's quite a lot of improvement that needs to happen, man. From the quality of service, sometimes you buy something, you wait forever, or let alone just to get the right answers, you know, from suppliers or people who sell those brands. Also, the pricing. Sometimes our people price their stuff very, very expensive, you know. But yeah, I'm one person who likes that, who likes buying local. Cheers.
How are you, Mr. Manyatel? Locally adura, even though ele quality. There are a lot of qualities locally, but they are expensive. For an example, let's just check my course. Number one, let's just check my course. I mean, you get a t-shirt, yeah, my course, what, 1,700, 2,000, you know. It was supposed to be something that is viable for local, for everyone locally, you understand? So how do we going to support things like Matrosa, brand like Matrosa, whereby not everybody can afford it, you know? So obviously the market is, it will always be low, because it's actually for, you know, big people who can afford. What about people who cannot afford? And those people who cannot afford, they are the people who's actually buying regularly. So yeah.
But it's okay not to afford a Matrosa t-shirt. I mean, not everybody is going to afford everything. My problem is we question a locally produced product when it's expensive, even though it's of good quality. But when it's an international product, it's Gucci, it's Versace, you don't question that the t-shirt costs 20,000 rand. But because it's locally produced, you're expecting it to be 200 rand, even when the quality is so good, even when, you know, the product itself and the process that it's gone through for it to be of that good quality has been quite elaborate to justify that price. And that's where my issue is. I'll get the Minister of Trade and Industry to speak to us for a couple of minutes after the latest in Eyewitness News headlines.
702, live from the Sandton Convention Center for the 12th Proudly South African Buy Local Summit and Expo.
For the 12th annual Buy Local Summit and Expo, it's 25 minutes before 10 o'clock. I've got the Minister of Trade and Industry, Ibrahim Patel, here with me. Minister, thank you so much for popping in. As always, when we are here, you make some time to pass by. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement. Great to be here, and great to be here on the floor of this exhibition of more than 200 South African, proudly South African businesses, I should say.
And these are resilient businesses, right? Through COVID-19, through supply chain challenges with the war in Ukraine, these are businesses that have really been resilient and are still standing.
Wow. I mean, these are companies that life has thrown everything at them, and they keep going. They employ local South Africans. They produce great products and services, and they help to grow our economy. They need to be celebrated, and that's what I think today's event is about.
Why is it important to buy local? There a few of our listeners who've been calling in and saying, well, some of them are deliberate about supporting local businesses, but others are, as you heard earlier, someone complaining about the price says for some of these locally produced, locally manufactured products. Why is it important? What kind of difference does it make in job creation, in growing the economy?
Well, Clement, let me start by saying that if we were to look at our import bill, we produce a significant number of products in South Africa, but we import something equivalent to 25% of our GDP. That's an enormous quantity of goods flowing into South Africa, many of which can be made locally and which can create local jobs. So when you want to grow your economy, and as an ordinary South African, you've got control over your spending power. That 100 rand that you're going to spend at ShopRite or at Foschini can either be creating a job in China or it can create a job in South Africa. That choice is your choice and it's my choice. And so part of what I've seen as I go around the world and I look at industrial development is the base of every country is their local market. They start by having a strong local market, and then they take that innovation, the margin that they make, they invest it further in their business, and they can then take on the world. We're on the cusp of a major growth in our exports to the rest of the African continent. Yeah, on the 31st of January this year, the president launched the African Continental Free Trade Area. And so we can sell many more products to other African countries, but we've got to build a domestic base. And that's what the local shopper, when they buy something, need to do. Now, of course, there are challenges that needs to be addressed. Pricing is important, quality is important. South African products, I must say, are generally of an excellent quality.
Yeah.
And you take clothing items, you're not generally going to regret after two washes or three washes that the buttons fall off, the color fades and so on, because most of our products meet good quality standards.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a little price premium. If you want the cheapest product in the world, you are going to pay double for it. You're going to pay the price that you pay, but you're going to have to replace it very quickly. So Proudly South African is about also building the South African brand.
Yeah.
It stands for quality, for innovation. And I think you made a really wonderful point. For those South African designers that are in niche markets, they're producing a product where there's a brand attached to it, yes, they're going to charge a premium for it because they're building their brand, like the Gucci's and so on have mm-hmm. built their brands mm-hmm. in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends what you want to buy. If you want to buy a basic T-shirt, you're going to just use it, you know, to do some work at home. It's very different to the T-shirt you're going to buy when you're going to go out with your buddies on a Friday night.
Or a T-shirt you want to buy when you're going to be on a red carpet.
Indeed.
At some awards.
Indeed.
That's got to be premium. Is government also, because sometimes you wonder if government is paying lip service when they talk about supporting local. From your experience as someone in government, have you been effective and intentional in buying local and supporting local?
One of the things that I'm delighted about, Clement, is the extent to which government departments are now buying a lot more local products. We've got a legal framework that we're putting in place now, a procurement bill going through Parliament, which will strengthen those even more. The army buys local boots. The police buy local uniforms. a number of hospitals, public hospitals, buy local chickens to feed patients. So we're growing in the purchasing by government departments of local products, and we're now expanding it to get a number of private businesses to also buy local. Last week, we had the Black Industrialist Conference, and large companies made pledges to buy locally manufactured goods made by Black South Africans in factories and workshops run by local people. And some of those were government departments, many of them were the private sector, and more than 260 billion rands of pledges were made for the next 5 years to buy more locally and to buy more from small businesses and from Black South Africans.
I hope they follow up on that, because it's one thing to make a pledge. I remember attending the Jobs Summit, the first ever Jobs Summit that COSATU has been calling on for many years. This is many years ago. It was at the convention center in Midrand. And following that, you know, government was not actively and intentionally buying local. But as you say now, things have improved. What about policies? Because that's another way you support local businesses. So your preferential procurement policies, localization, how is that helping? Because sometimes you've got parties like the DEA who want to claim that when you look at the declining industrial capacity, inequality, unemployment, part of the problem are those localization and preferential procurement policies.
It's like blaming the medicine for the illness of the patient. Localization is the cure, not the problem. The problem is a tendency that we've had in South Africa for a long, long time, that we export raw material to the rest of the world and we import finished goods. Value is produced elsewhere in the world in that. And so we're trying to change that. And let me give just a few examples. In the car industry, you can now buy a locally produced vehicle. A Mercedes-Benz C-Class is produced in only three places in the world: Bremen in Germany, Beijing in China, and in Buffalo City here in South Africa. If you want to buy, if you go to hospital and you need to be treated, the anesthetic that is used in an operation to put you to sleep so that the doctors can fiddle with your body and cut into it and help to heal it, that is now produced here locally by Aspen Pharmacare. So more and more products are coming home, they are being produced here, there's scope to do a lot more. And so there's a few policies of government that is now being pursued. The one is our trade policies. So we're now actively trying to support local producers. When we saw chicken being dumped from Brazil and a number of other countries, we put anti-dumping duties in place. When we saw local wheelbarrow producers struggling in the market because products were dumped, we put a protection in place for them. Yeah. So that's trade policies. The other one is competition policies. When companies merge with each other, we have significant localization pledges that's made. 6 billion rand worth of pledges were made during this administration. Legally, these are now legally binding commitments that companies made that the competition authorities follow up on.
The problem, though, is that we also have a self-sabotaging problem, so to speak. You look at what's happening at Transnet, our logistics crisis. I mean, there are vital exports that have been held up at sea. There are exports that have been blocked on the road. So, yes, Mercedes is also using our base to manufacture their vehicles, but sometimes they want to export products and they're not getting here on time. So how is that sabotaging this intention to support local and grow this economy?
There's no question about it that if we are going to make our localization campaign fizz and really take off, we need energy and we need transport logistics to be excellent. So I'm really pleased to see that we've had a significant turnaround in our ports, both Cape Town and Durban. The waiting times have come down. The throughput from the time that a ship arrives to when it leaves has significantly shortened. And we need to do even more, because when we have very efficient and effective logistics systems, we can bring raw materials from across the world and assemble it here, manufacture products here, and sell it not only in our domestic market, but also in other parts of the world. We're now producing products, significant amounts of products, leave South African shores for the United States, the UK, Germany, China and others. I must tell you, Clement, just a really nice point is from the 1st of January this year, rooibos tea got special preference in the world's largest tea market, which is China. So South Africa is exporting tea to China. Can you believe that?
Yeah. Interesting. All right, Ibrahim Patel, the Minister of Trade and Industry, thank you so much for making time for us. Good luck with the summit.
Thank you.
It's 15 minutes before 10 o'clock. When we come back, we'll continue with the 702 open line. Your thoughts on what happened on Friday. I'm asking you, how intentional do we need to be about, one, respecting the rights that people have, right, to exhaust legal avenues, go to court as much as you want? How do we balance that with the need to ensure that court processes are not abused? Is it even possible to prevent court processes from being abused?
The 12th Proudly South African Buy Local Summit and Expo, live on 702 with Proudly South African.
It's 13 minutes before 10 o'clock. Let's go to your calls on 011-883-0702. Kobe, you're calling us from Roodepoort. Good morning. Okay, we'll try that line again with Kobe. I don't know what happened there. Let's go to the WhatsApps on 072-702-1702.
Abuti Clement, you know, it's so sad we're in this country. You know, some people are given special rights and everything. No one is above the law. No one is above the law. Yes, you just said it yourself that, you know, high profile. I think that's those are the key words, high profile. Or should I say the status of a person counts in this country. And it's said that our judiciary, then they come forward, they say, no, we are not censored. You know, no one is telling us what to do, blah, blah, blah. It's said.
Yeah, and guys, let's be clear, right? I recognize that there are cases where someone may argue, listen here, I think my rights are being violated. I want to interdict your arrest warrant. But should it not matter what the basis of that interdict is? Or do you argue that, well, let's allow it to go to court so that that process unfolds and then we can decide what happens next and the court can help guide us? Because if I say to you, I feel my rights are being violated if you're arresting me and it's my birthday and I want to see a full docket, that's not how things work though. Like, if that's your basis for trying to interdict an arrest and you say, I want to see the full docket, I want to see how strong your case is, that is a matter that is going to be dealt with in court. When have you ever seen someone want to see a full docket, want to see the strength of the case before they even appear in court? So in that case, should we be entertaining that interdict? Or, as outrageous as this sounds, do you go ahead and execute that warrant of arrest and you can explain in court later on that we were not satisfied with the reason this person gave for wanting to interdict that arrest? Or do you think that's only a space that a judge can operate in to let you know that I've looked at your reasons for wanting to interdict this and therefore you fail in this regard? So it's not a decision that the NPA would have to make. I don't know. Let me know what your thoughts are.
Morning, Clement and team. Clement, I don't know if you noticed, the ANC's got that thing, just before the elections, they throw one of their members under the bus. Last time, I think it was Isma Khashule. And with the previous election, they threw Jacob Zuma under the bus just before elections. And now it's the speaker. It's old tactics, man, of this ANC, Ian from Yaldos.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's what she's arguing in her court papers, that this is all about the upcoming elections. Yeah, I'm not convinced. I got a message from a friend who's a lawyer who says to me, hi, Hey, Clem, an arrest is meant to secure your attendance in court to face charges. And in the event that you can guarantee your attendance through arrangements with your legal representative, then you can make such an arrangement. And yes, it does happen with ordinary people. The police always call people with warrants to come to the police station to present themselves for an arrest. And of course, police can arrest people at an active crime scene. So what happens then when someone, the police are trying to make an arrangement with someone to present themselves before the police station and they're not cooperating with that? So at what point do the police then start employing the tactic of going and effecting that warrant of arrest? Because clearly there's no cooperation here, right? And yes, in this case, when they were trying to make that arrangement, that's when the speaker said, yo, stop on your tracks, because I want to interdict this, because I feel you've already shared the case with the media. You might as well share it with me. And from what I've seen, it doesn't look like you even have a strong case against me. So then the NPA now are pulling back. Let's go to David. Let's start with Sean, who's calling us from Sandton. Sean, good morning.
Clement, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I'm no expert economist, but what I do know is that it's pretty simple economy 101. If you're manufacturing inside of a country, it's twofold. You reduce unemployment because you're employing people to work in the manufacturing sector. And in so, they're mm-hmm. earning a salary, which means they can buy more within the country. That has a knock-on effect in terms of what you're manufacturing, because if there's a demand for a product, you're going to be manufacturing more, and then obviously quantity of scale. If you produce more, if you buy more, then you get it for a cheaper price. So at the moment, we've got economy of scales. Hello?
Yes, hello? I'm listening to you. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, Sean. Man. You cut out there for a second. So if you have the economy of scales, you basically are manufacturing stuff and you're not purchasing goods from outside countries. You're buying, manufacturing inside your country, which means you can start exporting if you have a surplus. And that's pretty much what we've seen with China over the last 20 to 30 years, where they've become literally, I think in the last year or so, the number one economy in the world that's just surpassed America. That's because America in the past was manufacturing everything, America and England, whereas now America mostly imports stuff the same as us. We need to manufacture more in this country. In order to get there, you would obviously need a stimulus from government in order to make it viable for people to manufacture.
And you need reliable energy because we are talking about industrialization here as well. If you don't have a logistics network that works, you don't have reliable energy, then forget it. It's not going to work. Thanks for your call, Sean. David in Indonesia, what are your thoughts?
Good morning, Clement. Thanks for taking my call. John just about said what I wanted to say. You know, you stole my thunder. You there, Clement? Clement?
Okay, so what? He's already said what you wanted to say.
And one more thing I want to add. Clement, go into a Woolworths, go into an Edgar's, go into one of these big stores, and find me 10 items that doesn't say made in Vietnam, made in Bangladesh, made in India, made in China, made in that. I challenge you to that. 10 items,
David,
that will say made in South Africa.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your call. Jay, you are in Bryanston. Good morning. I don't know what happened with that call. Let's go to your WhatsApps. 072-702-1702.
Good morning, Clement. We've seen this with Zuma. We've seen this with the Premier of the Eastern Cape. He did that a couple of months ago. The question is, is the NPA competent? Does it have competent advocates, lawyers, legal practitioners that can actually push beyond this stumbling block that we see politicians taking advantages of? And after they have interdicted that they shouldn't be arrested, nothing ever happens. No follow-up, nothing. The case, it becomes mute, and then that's it. So you tend to ask yourself if it is deliberately done that the NPA is incompetent. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Hotso from the lady.
I mean, where is Ace Makhashule's case? Where is Zandile Gumede's case? Where's Edwin Sodi's case? Where's Angelo Agritz's case? Lindam T. Where's their case? Huh? Where's the Nulani investment case? It's ended in acquittal because the judge there in Bloemfontein said they don't even have evidence. They were hoping they'll collect evidence as they go. So I hear you and I understand your concern. We're dealing with an NPA that in some cases, it's really gone after people when they clearly were not ready to prosecute those cases. Is this going to be one of those cases? I mean, these allegations started many years ago, before Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula was even speaker. This was contained in that whistleblower document that Banti Olomisa submitted to Parliament. So yes, she's going to appear in court, and then what? We're going to wait another 6 years? Another 4 years?
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyatela
on 702.
All right, it's a minute before 10 o'clock. After the news, we are going to reflect on what happened in Russia on Friday. It's quite scary how things unfolded there. They had a terror attack. And I don't know. One, the scariest thing is how this was carried out. You've got men in camouflage clothing who were just opening fire and throwing explosive devices inside a packed city hall in Moscow before a performance by a Soviet-era rock band, right? But also, what's scary is that the US did warn Russia about a possible terror attack. And what did Russia do? Well, President Putin dismissed it as propaganda designed to scare Russian citizens. We'll find out more about the details of what happened.